Good afternoon and welcome to The Source. If a toad ever hopped across your path in Brackenridge Park, it very likely would have been a Texas Gulf Coast toad. The largest toad in Texas has been given an honored place at the park now in a series of clay mosaic murals depicting the toads and their tadpoles and the environment in which they live. The city describes the toad murals as a depiction of birds, insects, fish, and flowers on a decorative motif that captures the energy, complexity, and contradictions that pulse through modern society. Diane Kersey was commissioned by the city to create public art murals for the city's Catalpa-Pershing Bridge Modifications Project. She's completed both bridges now, and the unveiling is expected this month. I visited with Kersey at the new Millrace Bridge at the golf club and talked with the artist about her work on the two projects that already have been affectionately accorded new names, the Toad and Golf Bridges.
So this bridge is kind of bridging the Broadway corridor and then the old Brack Clubhouse. And on the Broadway corridor, there's a lot of the kind of 1920s Art Deco buildings, like the Buttercrest building. And so I wanted to bridge visually that Art Deco idea with the clubhouse here, which is sort of English Tudor. And don't explain that to me, why it's English Tudor. But it's a very rustic type of building, kind of reminds me of an old hunting lodge. When you go inside, there's a big fireplace and that type of thing. And so my idea was to kind of go with some Art Deco ideas, but make them in a more rustic style, which also is kind of the history of Brackenridge Golf Park. Brackenridge Park, when you think of all the concrete faux wood, faux bow sculptures. So there's a lot of wonderful rustic type of artwork already in the park, the Joskies Pavilion, that type of thing. And so we're bridging the gap here using bright kind of Art Deco colors and using things, golf motifs, but arranging them in a way that is Art Deco yet rustic and fits in with the English Tudor thing.
And so you were saying that you did a lot of research and talked to a lot of different people. Do you just know the right questions to ask? How do you get a vision of how you're going to do something like this?
So as a public artist, and I really did some thinking about what public art was about, and I really think that the public basically is hiring me to tell their story, to tell a story about the area. And so I think it's my job to really go and go to community meetings and really listen to what people want. And that I don't have any answers and I don't have an agenda about what it is I want to portray, because I want to hear what the community wants, because basically they own this artwork after it's over. And so with that in mind, and after hearing what everybody wants the bridge to do or say, then I kind of go back into my studio and come up with some ideas, and then it gets presented to the public art board and we have a good conversation. I think the public art board here in San Antonio is very dedicated and really great, and they're a partnership with the artist, and that's been a great experience. And so by that whole process, we come up with an idea that works, that the community accepts, that I feel like with my visual training, I can depict in a real positive, strong way. And so that's kind of the process that happens in a public artwork.
And so this is also, it contains a Mexican influence and a golf story within each panel?
Yeah. I think my work in general, it really speaks about kind of these primary cultures all over the world. And a lot of the reasons is because I use in my glazes pretty much just iron and copper, and so that gives it kind of an earthiness. And then I am very influenced by Mexican pottery, and my work kind of has a boldness about it, like a Aztec work. And so yeah, it's kind of a marriage of everything that I enjoy. It kind of just gets sucked into my brain and then comes back out. There's a book out that's called Old Brack, and that has a lot of the information about the history of Brackenridge Golf Course, and so that was very helpful. And then also Maria Pfeiffer, that lives over in River Road neighborhood, she's a historian, and she wrote a tremendous document about the area in Brackenridge Park. And so I was able to glean a lot of information from that, and then just talk to a lot of people that care about this place and love this place and know a lot of the history about it. And so I sort of gathered all that information up and then came up with some key vignettes that are important to the history of the Brackenridge Golf Course.
And those are on the inside of the bridge?
Right, they're on the inside of the bridge.
How many of those are there?
There's 8 panels.
Tell me some of those stories.
So one of the inside panels is the Oaks. And it's a little vignette of a little picnic bench and an oak tree. And that was at the 12th hole. There was a woman that had a sandwich stand on the 12th hole, and she would serve sandwiches, and it was a known thing in the golf course that you had to stop by there and get a sandwich and drink lemonade or get a beer and wait 15 minutes so that you wouldn't, you know, screw up the progression of the golfers, and then you would move on to the 13th hole. And so it just was a tradition here at Brackenridge Golf Course.
So it wasn't something just to be polite and stop at her house.
It was like an extra hole in a way. So you stopped and had your sandwich and waited for the next group to finish, you know, ahead of you. Yeah.
And there was a dog?
Yeah. So Jack O'Brien was a famous sports writer here in San Antonio, and he was really big on golf, and he helped build up the Texas Open. And his dog was named Queenie, and he followed her she followed him everywhere he went, and she became a beloved, little mascot here at Brackenridge at Old Brack. And so they have a painting of her that's hung in the clubhouse for forever. And so we decided to put her also into the bridge.
Yeah.
Another thing that's important here is Gutzon Borglum was a famous sculptor that he's designed and built the Mount Rushmore up in the Dakotas. And his studio was here right by the bridge at the Waterworks, old Waterworks building, which was the first pump house for the city of San Antonio that was owned by Brackenridge.
That's not this building.
That's this building. That was his studio. There used to be a canal that came from the San Antonio River, and you can see the line of trees on the golf course. And the canal went underneath the Waterworks building, and in there was a big pump, and it was a pump house, and they pumped the water up to Fort Sam, a hill up on Fort Sam, and then by gravity it served the rest of San Antonio. And so that was a major infrastructure project. So then after that stopped being used, it became a Borglum studio, and he was here for 13 years. And so we also put him in the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Another important figure for here at Old Brack was A.W. Tillinghast. He was a pioneering golf architect, and he built a lot of the early courses here in America. And the city of San Antonio brought him in and had him construct the golf course. And this was a wilderness at that point. You know, it was a wild, full of prickly pear cactus. And they even say there was a den of wolves here at the course.
Well, let's go look at the interior so we can get closer and talk about some of the pieces.
Yeah, so this will get better once we kind of polish them up. You know, take a brush to it.
But they're so shiny.
Yeah.
And explain to me some of these golf balls. Maybe
okay.
Describe them.
So these ones in the corners here are the history of the golf ball, and this is what the feathery looked like. It kind of looked like a baseball.
Smooth, right? Surface with a couple of seams.
Right. And then they evolved to kind of these different ways of having, you know, divots and the little square recesses. And then they evolved to the golf ball that we know now in present day.
With round divots.
Right.
And before they were square.
Right.
And then what about that one on the bottom?
They have the nubs that poked out instead of going in. So one of the, I think, the characteristics of my work is in my pottery and in my sculpture and everything is I really want it to look like it was made out of clay and proud to be made out of clay, you know, celebrating that it's made out of clay. And so one way I do that is to capture that it really looks like it was wet clay that's been kind of frozen. And so you can see, like, this is where my thumb went and smushed the clay and ended. And you can see where it bended and dried. And that's real important to me, that I think a lot of times ceramic work is made and refined to look like it could have been made out of a different material. And I'm kind of unapologetic that I love clay.
Uh-huh.
And I want everybody to be aware that this is ceramic.
This is The Source, and we're talking with Diana Kersey, the artist commissioned by the city to create murals for two bridges into Brackenridge Park and the golf club off Broadway.
When did you start the process with the city, and how did you dip your toe in that water?
2 years ago, there was a call for artists, and it was through the 2007 through 2012 infrastructure bond that the citizens of San Antonio passed. And part of the bond was to have some money for public art. And Public Art San Antonio began. Up until 2 years ago, they didn't have a department dedicated to public art in San Antonio. Just recently, the city council passed a 1% for public art, and so now all future infrastructure projects will have a budget for public art. And I think that's a huge thing for San Antonio to do for its citizens. I think it will help the tourist industry, and it will celebrate the richness of our culture. You know, we have a really vibrant city, and our infrastructure should depict that.
Well, this wiggles.
Yeah. Isn't that exciting?
And so you found out about it.
Yeah, so there was a call for artists. I submitted my past work, which is a lot of private commissions that I've done. And I was very fortunate that the Public Art Board accepted me and awarded me this commission.
And so they called you up and said, come in and make presentations, and was that a long process?
Well, so I was assigned this bridge, and then I had a time period to do some research and to come up with some design ideas. I met with community members, had a lot of public meetings, and then I came up with my ideas and I presented it to the Public Art Board. And the Public Art Board had some suggestions, and you know, I went back to and did some more refining and drawing and presented it again, and then they were accepted. And at that point, I started attending meetings with the civil engineers and that were designing the bridge. And I had some input from the very beginning that was very helpful. Boom Powell came to one meeting and was very helpful, helping with some ideas for the guardrails.
Really?
Yeah, he came for 45 minutes and completely made this a better bridge. So
what was his
experience. Well, when the civil engineers first designed this bridge, they had a 7-foot guardrail that was just solid concrete. And then I was supposed to put work on the concrete. And it just, it was sort of a monolithic thing, and it didn't fit with the nature of the park. It was great for a highway, maybe. That's how we see highway bridges. And, you know, civil engineers, they design great highways. But it took Boom Powell, with his experience as an architect, to say, well, what if we put these little window openings in the bridge? And that's kind of an older way of making bridges. And so you have this kind of visual way to look through the windows. And then that kind of sets up my tile work. And so if you look across here and you see the bridge, there's a visual rhythm to the bridge of the windows and the horizontal piece and windows and vertical and windows and horizontal and windows and horizontal. And so that's like a visual beat that you can enjoy. And it made it a much better bridge than it would have been if it had just been a solid mass of concrete with my work on it. The way these are made is I build a giant slab out of clay, solid, and I make my designs, and then after it's finished, I'll cut it apart when it's still wet into sections, and so they become these puzzle pieces that then get fired, and then when they're installed, the grout lines between them kind of separate them out, and so it's not like your normal tile mural, maybe like a square tile. So my tiles are never square. They're always part of the bigger whole, and they're put together like a puzzle. So the grout lines become an integrated part of the whole visual thing, just like maybe stained glass would do.
What would be the greatest compliment that you could get if you see the public enjoying it?
The greatest compliment? I think a couple of things. One, that when I was making this, I really wanted it to look like once the bridge was in with the bridge, that it looked integrated with the bridge, and it looked like maybe it had always been here, that it's timeless. That it looks good now, but it looks like it could have been made in the 1920s, or it could be made in the future, and it doesn't have this kind of dated time period it was made at this time. And that's real important to me for just about all my work. I think the other thing is that people that love the subject think that I did a good job portraying it, and that they really get a kick out of looking at it.
Jimmy LaFleur is the city's public arts manager.
So, Jimmy, this bridge project is not the first public art project, but it's certainly one of the most visible. What are you looking forward to in terms of, you know, the community seeing it and realizing the benefits of public art through this kind of project?
We certainly feel like Breckenridge Park is one of the jewels of the city. And having these important bridges that were really created for a drainage purpose be rebuilt and become a kind of gateway threshold to the park from Broadway, as well as to the golf course just a little bit further north from Mulberry. Those were a great opportunity for visibility, something that would be kind of have that romantic charm of Breckenridge and the river itself, and something that we felt like would have that maybe a little eclectic nature to the artwork, as well as something that had that kind of handcrafted feel of San Antonio. So this is the first public art project that the artist has done. She was selected based on a really incredible body of work of ceramic pottery and even some kitchens and backsplashes that she had done. But with that impressive background, she's really taken a leap forward, and she's really shown how that type of a treatment can be a durable part of the concrete bridge, and I think kind of opening a door for her own future in terms of career as an artist, to not just look at things through the eyes of what's the traditional model, but maybe working outside and in the community on bigger projects.
And then that's what you guys do all the time, is look for new opportunities, right? What do you think is the importance of a community having public art? San Antonio is growing its public arts repertoire over the past few years, but it's just really coming into its own right now. What do you think it does for a community?
Well, I think it gives them a sense of, you know, identity. We all have somewhat generic kind of streets and infrastructure that basically are everywhere. But when a public art opportunity comes up, it gives us a chance to pause and really think about what is the history of our community and our site and our places. What are the things that we want to say about where we are in a contemporary way, in terms of just taking in account where we stand when this work was being done, and then having something that, you know, as I always thought growing up myself, seeing something like a public art is a way of almost feeling confident that, you know, you could actually continue on in this city and be part of projects that, you know, are opening doors, and not necessarily just feeling somehow that they are stifling, or that you want to leave this place. You want to stay in this type of place that has art and kind of a vibrant culture.
You can see the Toad and Golf Bridges. The Toad Bridge is located on Mulberry Avenue off Broadway, and the Golf Bridge is about half a mile south on Milray Street. To learn more about the Bridges project or to hear this program again, go to our website, tpr.org. San Antonio is getting ready to celebrate a year of jazz. Trinity University's KRTU-FM is leading a citywide celebration of arts and culture, and KRTU is developing unprecedented coalition of arts, cultural, and educational organizations from across the city for the celebration. Beginning this month and continuing each month for a year, they will stage jazz events across San Antonio, tying together the community's major cultural institutions. KRTU Associate General Manager Ron Nierenberg joined Texas Public Radio's David Martin Davies in our studios to tell us more about the Year of Jazz.
San Antonio's Year of Jazz is an unprecedented collaboration of arts and cultural organizations to highlight the richness and diversity of San Antonio's cultural community through America's original art form.
When do we kick it off? What's the big event?
We kick it off on October 23rd, that's a Sunday, in Sunken Garden Theater with Sunday in Brackenridge Park. It's called a Jazz Family Showcase, which will feature several elements. It'll kick off with the youth orchestras of San Antonio performing some jazz works. We'll go into some performances by different organizations that are part of the Year of Jazz, exhibiting and highlighting their organizations through performance art. Then the mayor will be doing a reading of Charlie Parker Played Bebop in front of students that are in attendance, kids. They'll also be receiving that book, courtesy of the San Antonio Public Library Foundation. Then we'll go into the highlights of the evening, which are the world premiere of the San Antonio Jazz Suite, commissioned by KRTU and composed by Aaron Prado, who's a local pianist and educator. And then we'll be doing the grand finale with the San Antonio Symphony, performing some jazz works, big band works, big band arrangements, in the place where they had their very first performance in the city, in the Sunken Garden Theater.
And this will continue, like there'll be a major event like every month.
Yeah, we'll have the Year of Jazz kicks off on October 23rd, but then it's sustained year-round. And it's partly to, again, use jazz as a vehicle for highlighting the different aspects of our cultural community. And this is, again, celebration of KRTU's 10th anniversary in jazz as a jazz radio station. And so we'll be going through different venues in town, different cultural organizations. In November, we'll be at the Instituto Cultural de México. We'll be going through the Carver, the Guadalupe, the Art Museums, Woody, Art Pace, San Antonio Museum of Art, McNay. The Culinary Institute even has an event in September of 2012. all culminating again in October 7th, 2012, which is the 10th anniversary of KRTU's jazz format. And that'll be in Laurie Auditorium with a grand finale concert, a reprise of the Jazz Suite, a performance by the Jim Cullum Jazz Band. So it's going to be a celebration that lasts a year, that celebrates jazz, celebrates our cultural heritage, and gets the entire city rallying around the idea that collaborative art is the way of the future and the way we can identify ourselves as a city.
It's really impressive about this. What's impressive about this year of jazz is that it weaves all of San Antonio's major performing arts institutions together. And if a person who supports the arts decides you're going to get on board and just follow through all of the events and go to everything, you will basically touch all the major foundations and institutions of arts and culture in San Antonio.
Right. One of the unique qualities of San Antonio is that it has such a diverse cultural community. And, you know, we are already dubbing ourselves, and other people are dubbing ourselves as the America's 21st century city. So what better language or art communication method can we have than jazz to really exhibit that diversity, which in and of itself is a reflection of America's diverse heritage. So we're basically providing a jazz platform for us to celebrate the different parts of our city, and then inviting the community to come celebrate with us in a way that will help people see aspects of the cultural community that they may probably have never seen before.
So if a person does decide they want to follow through this whole event throughout the year, is this going to be expensive?
Well, no, actually. You only have to pick your favorite art organization. If you're a member of any single organization that's involved in the Year of Jazz, KRTU being one of them, the Witte, the McNay. If you're a member of any single organization, you get to enjoy all of the concerts during the Year of Jazz for free, no matter where they are. You know, we do invite everyone, and this is a way for us to emphasize patronage during a time that there's not a whole lot of public money available for arts organizations. So it's a way of emphasizing patronage. So I hope the message that comes across is that it's important for you to belong to the arts community. Pick your favorite venue, and let's celebrate together. If there are people who are able to join multiple organizations, great, do it. But just do what you can. Become part of an organization and enjoy the fruits of all of our labor.
And where can I go online to learn more about this?
The website is yearofjazz.org. It's got a listing of all of the different events, venues, and what it takes to get to one of those venues. You know, it lists all of the organizations. If you're a member, you can get in. It also lists the different artists that will be performing at the different venues. So, and it'll also be a kind of a documentary as we go along. We'll put some photos, some clips up there, and people can really track the progress of Year of Jazz.
Is it catching on? Are people like getting really excited, fired up about this?
We've been hearing some people get excited about it. We had we've had several people come up and, you know, already thought it started because our grand finale is on October 7th. That was a couple of days ago. We had some people show up for a concert. But, you know, it is going to last a year. People are very excited that they do get to enjoy all of these concerts all over town. And we think more and more people will get on board and really see what's stunning about our community, the fact that, you know, we do have this wonderful arts community and we can all celebrate together.
Ron Nierenberg is the Associate General Manager at KRTU, San Antonio's jazz radio station. KRTU is celebrating its 10th year of playing jazz at 91.7 FM. And they're marking the milestone with a Year of Jazz, a year-long jazz party that will connect the city's major arts organizations. There's more info online at yearofjazz.org. You've been listening to The Source on KSTX. We get production help from Andrea Liao. Our web producers are Joy Marie Scott and Albert Salazar. The website is tpr.org. The Source is also available on iTunes. Wayne Coble is the KSTX program director. I'm Eileen Pace. The Source is a production of Texas Public Radio.